Good Monday morning to you. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for tuning in to The West Side. Today we feature a panel discussion about fake news held at UW-Eau Claire, featuring reporters from TV and print in Eau Claire and La Crosse. Moderating the discussion was Amanda Tyler of WEAU-TV in Eau Claire.
Thanks for joining us, everybody. So a little background about myself. I am a UW-Eau Claire alum as well here at UW-Eau Claire. Graduated back in 2012. I got my start in TV at WEAU back in the fall of 2011 as an intern. And they were lucky enough, I guess, to hire me. I don't know. Or unlucky enough to hire me. I don't know. So now they're stuck with me. But pleasure to be here. And I think it's, in this day and age, a very important topic for not only our students, but our public to understand what's going through our minds when we make the decisions that we make. When you guys are watching television news, some people take it as a relaxing thing, just to sit down and kind of have the television on as you're enjoying a late night dinner or a cocktail by the TV. Some people are just relaxing, eating some popcorn. Whatever you guys do when you're watching us on the other side of the television, you know, sometimes you might be engaged. Sometimes it might just be an experience that you have us on as background noise. But there is a lot of thought and process that goes into what we do every day. And in this day and age, so many people, I think, might take that process for granted. So I hope you kind of take our comments here to light and process them as you go about your day and the next couple days as you watch our broadcasts, read our newspapers, listen to radio, whatever media that you guys ingest throughout your day. So as we start this off, I think I'll pass the torch on down the line here and kind of introduce the rest of our panel members. And with that, we'll begin with Andrew Pfeffer.
Well, hi, everyone. I'm Andrew Pfeffer. I'm the news director at WEAU. I don't know how in detail you want me to get about myself, but I've been with the station for about, I'll ballpark it at 12 years. I've been on two tours of duty with WEAU. I started in 04, left in 06, came right back in 07, and they haven't been able to get rid of me yet. I've been news director for the last two, which is a totally different beast from any other job in the newsroom, and I've done a lot of them. It's a joy, it's a struggle, it's exhilarating, it's frustrating, but the best part about it is the people I get to work with every day, two of whom are in this room, thankfully.
Good evening. I'm Rusty Cunningham, executive editor of the La Crosse Tribune. I'm also honored to be on the advisory panel for the J School Communication School here at UW-Eau Claire. And a proud parent of an alum from this wonderful university. So thank you for inviting me.
Great. I am not a graduate of UW-Eau Claire, although when I was going to school in Menominee, I wished I could be a student here. things just didn't work out. My name is Dan Schellinger. I'm the news director of WQOW News 18. I've been there for 3 years and in a whole bunch of TV stations for the 40 years prior to that, which we won't bore you with. So just glad to be here tonight.
All right, with that, we will kick off the panel discussion. And the first question that I'm going to pose here is going to be, as journalists in this day and age, we have a whole host of tools at our fingertips. Most recently, social media has become something that we use in our daily lives, personally and professionally. With social media and the internet comes a whole host of options for people out there, some of that being fake news. Why don't we just start off by defining fake news and maybe separating that out distinctly from other content that people are reading that is legitimate forms of news. How can people weed out fake news in this day and age? Andrew, kick
well,
it off with you.
Sure. I could say watch WEAU, but that would be the easy short answer. How can we weed out fake news? Well, we have to be skeptical. We have to understand where our news is coming from, who is presenting it, what efforts have been undertaken to get from the initial information to what goes on air or goes in a newspaper. And it's harder and harder as time goes on, just because of all the stuff that's out there. As journalists, we go to great lengths to make sure that what we report is the real McCoy. One of my predecessors, John Hoffland, who was news director at our station for 25 years, used to tell us, if your mother says she loves you, check it out. Because there are a lot of things floating around out there, a lot of information out there that sounds authentic and is not. And I think one of the tools we have at our disposal, frequently underutilized and easy to utilize, is a telephone. Information is all over the place on the internet, on social media, but we should consider a lot of it to be a clue, a way to what is really happening out there. And if more of us would just pick up the phone and try and flush it out that way, the old-fashioned way, we'd be able to avoid putting out what some consider fake news.
Rusty or Dan?
Sure. So I hope everybody knows about this. This is fake news. It's not what Donald Trump calls fake news. He calls anything he disagrees with fake news. This is a story that appeared a few days before the election that says an FBI agent who is investigating Hillary Clinton's emails murdered his wife and himself and set their house on fire. Complete 100% fabrication. Never happened. And yet, 8 million people saw this because the shyster who wrote it and produced it, a guy by the name of Justin Kohler, very smartly employed bots, automated computer programs that retweet and favorite and push stuff to Facebook so that it shows up on your Facebook feed, on your Twitter feed, because it's popular, because it's trending. 8 million people saw this a few days before the election. How many of them believed it? How much did it influence the election? I have no way of knowing. Certainly some people believed it. My brother was one of the people who sent this to me a few days before the election. He said, do you see what's happening? It's the Clintons. They're murdering people again. It's complete fake. I hope everybody saw the piece that 60 Minutes did a couple of months ago where they actually interviewed some of the people that produced this stuff. The one guy makes $10,000 a month by virtue of the ad clicks that are on the website next to his fake stories. So some people are doing it to push a political agenda. Some people are just doing it to make money. And the guy said he got a rush out of watching the clicks go up, knowing that that was his paycheck going up day after day after day. How do you discern this from the real stuff? I don't know. One real easy way to me is if you only see it in one place, if the Denver Guardian, which isn't a real newspaper, by the way, is the only place that has this story, if you're not seeing it on ABC, NBC, CBS, and everywhere else, then it's probably fake. That would be my answer.
I think as journalists, and this isn't exactly a contrary view, but I knew these two would do a great job of summing up the whole fake news issue. To me, though, I think it behooves us to change the conversation about fake news and alternative facts and instead focus on what we do and why it's crucial to democracy. We're journalists. We're not members of the media. The media includes, I've heard it called movies, video games, rap lyrics, jocks who are now announcers. Yeah, well, none is a journalist. We're journalists. And we would be very wise to remember to differentiate ourselves as a trusted source of information. I think there's one other thing that's important to remember. Our role is constitutionally protected in a democracy. And I'll chat about that in a little bit. But let's look, instead of, and we should be concerned about the fake, but let's talk about the real. And let's focus on that as journalists. Let's take a look at David A. Farenthal, who just won a Pulitzer for the Washington Post for taking all of Trump's claims about his charitable work and tracking down every one. And a lot of them were bogus. He won a Pulitzer for that. You don't find that in the Denver, whatever the hell it is. You find that in a real newspaper doing real work. Where'd you find out about Bill O'Reilly and Fox spending $13 million to settle sexual harassment claims? By the way, that's the former Fox person, Bill O'Reilly, if you'd like to put that in your no-spin zone. So political spin is nothing new, nothing at all. Are there quicker ways of spreading bogus lies? Of course. But I would argue that as journalists, one of our key responsibilities is reminding people what we do and what we do damned well and why it's so important.
Rusty, you had alluded briefly there to the First Amendment. Would you say the First Amendment is more important now than it is, has been at any point in our history since that's been in place?
Just 45 words. Do you know that? 45 words. It was passed by Congress September 25th, 1789, ratified December 15th, 1791, the first of the 10 Bill of Rights. It reads, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press, or the right of people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. I would argue that that wording is sweeping, inclusive, and straightforward, and it protects each and every one of us. It doesn't differentiate by religion, nation of origin, gender, color, or political party. And in fact, it is the same First Amendment that protects a guy in the White House from tweeting whatever the heck he wants, just as it is with our reporting work. And I think because of that, it's a good reminder that in truth, it's never been more important.
I'll pose the same question to our other two panelists. Again, I'll reiterate, is the First Amendment more important now than ever?
I don't know that it's more important. It's always been important, and it's the reason it's the First Amendment. It wasn't the Second Amendment. It was the First Amendment. It troubles me that the First Amendment protects lies as well as the truth. But if you're going to start being an arbiter of what's truth and what's not, then we're getting down a slippery slope that I don't think any of us want to go down. Who's going to be the person that decides that? So it has to work the way it works. It's messy. It's not always fair. But yes, it's important.
I'd almost argue that it progressively gets more important as we go down the road here, because there are more obstacles, more channels, more, I guess, swerves and curves in the road as far as a democracy is concerned. You know, we hold it dear because it's part of the essence of what we do, but I would think that a lot of people out there just assume that it is. And I hope that more often than not, we'll kind of take a step back and realize that the First Amendment is very important to all of us, not just journalists and people who produce news and information.
I think you made a wonderful point when you said it's troubling that it protects all sorts of information. And it does. But remember well the words of Voltaire. I disapprove of what you say, but I will defend to the death your right to say it. Pretty important concept.
Moving on from that, as we talked about the ease of getting distracted by some of these articles, Dan brought up that article that had been shared so many times, and it's so easy to share these articles online. It is very easy for us as journalists to get distracted trying to chase down the truth. Do you guys believe that's taking away from our efforts of publishing truthful, helpful information to our viewers and our readers?
Is fake news distracting from our efforts to tell the truth?
Correct.
I don't think it distracts from what we do. I think all along it's been important for us to be right, tell the truth. Sometimes that's easy and straightforward, and sometimes that's a lot more complicated than you would think. We preach to our reporters and our producers that, you know, fake news is kind of the enemy of what we do, and we should flush out everything and make sure that what we put on air has been thoroughly vetted and ready for public dissemination. That means different things in different situations, but I think the fake news part of it is kind of white noise.
And you just mentioned a bit ago in your introduction, 40 years. I can say the same thing. In the last 40 years, you might be surprised. We've been fed all sorts of nonsense by politicians, by PR people working for companies that were doing things they shouldn't have been doing, by people in a community who don't have anything better to do. So is it disseminated more quickly now? Is it easier to share? No question. But let's not kid ourselves. It's not that our society, we've become liars in the last 18 months. I mean, this is not a new trend. We've had liars and fakes for a long, long time. It's just easier for them now. And frankly, with smaller news staffs than we once had, that means we have to be more discerning. But still, as Andrew said, make sure we're doing our due diligence, asking the right questions, picking up the phone and challenging, doing all those sorts of things.
The worst thing we can do is publish a mistake. I tell my people every day, I know Andrew does too, I'd rather be last and right than to be first and wrong. Because every time any of us publishes a story that's factually incorrect, or I get on my people even about typos and spelling errors, because every time we do that, we put ourselves in the same category as the fake news. Then all of a sudden people start wondering, well, they're really not any different than this, are they? You know, and we just shoot ourselves in the foot. And that's why I think, I don't know that, Amanda, it's become a distraction, but I think it's more important than ever before that we be very, very careful and make sure that everything we publish is correct, 100% correct.
Fake news, a term that's been floating around frequently, more frequently than it has in the past, you know, it kind of has become almost a buzzword, you know, something that we hear time and time again. Do you think that hurts our credibility in the minds of the public when legitimate journalists can be portrayed as, quote-unquote, fake news?
Michael Gerson of the Washington Post wrote these words, published, I believe, yesterday. At the seedy crossroads of political polarization and declining trust in media is where fake news loiters. Without a belief in professional, vetted, reliable sources of truth, truth may be determined by loyalty to an ideological team. What is the answer? It is obviously complicated to rebuild ties of institutional trust and individual empathy. But one response must be a journalism of rebuilt standing. I think that's pretty well put.
I know you see it on your Facebook page every day. We see it on ours where people label legitimate stories fake news, and they're following somebody else's lead in this, that anything I don't like, I just call it out as fake news. And I think it troubles all of us to have hard work where you've spent 7 or 8 hours double-checking sources and vetting everything and making sure it's correct, and then to have some, you know, idiot post fake news on your Facebook page. You just want to scream at them. But what I've been trying to teach our folks is to not pay any attention to those people, to ignore them. You know, if we know that what we're doing is correct, and if we're right in our facts, then that's the best argument against that.
Yeah, that's a fantastic point. The truth is always the best argument. When we get into this business, I'm sure both of you were told, just as I was, you have to have a thick skin. You can't do this without having a thick skin. People are going to say things about you that may appall you and may insult you, but you have to let it slide off your back. Fake news is just the latest of those many terms that I'm sure we've all heard over the years. But when we put forth the effort and we know in our heart of hearts that we've done what we've done the right way, that's, I guess, the ultimate prize, is to be able to, you know, to sit back after it's done, despite the name-calling or fake news labeling or whatever else, and say, I put forth my best effort, and this is the truth.
Now let's take a break from our West Side broadcast of UW-Eau Claire's panel discussion on fake news. We'll be back in just a bit.
Support for WPR comes from the UW Health Breast Center, offering second opinions for more than 4,000 Wisconsin women and men diagnosed with breast cancer each year. More at uwhealth.org/second opinion.
You're listening to the West Side broadcast of UW-Eau Claire's panel discussion about fake news, featuring Amanda Tyler of WEAU, Andrew Pfeffer of WEAU, Dan Schillinger of WQOW, and Rusty Cunningham of the La Crosse Tribune. Now back to the discussion.
We learn so much in school about triangulation, and triangulation is at the core of what we do every day. I think that is a great way to also prevent ourselves from falling to the trap of fake news, because you're not only verifying your sources through one person, you're trying to verify them through multiple different people, too, which can also help as a backstop to hopefully filter anything out that might lie into fake news. Moving ahead, for people out there who regularly consume media, any tips you guys can offer to spot and prevent the spread of these fake news stories we see so often on social media?
Well, I'd say simply consider the source. Where are you getting your information from? Is there something about the web address that looks a little funny? Does the logo look a little skewed? Is it something that's so unbelievable that you almost want to double check that it isn't somewhere else in that same form or fashion? I'd say that's a good starting point. And with experience, I would think that the educated news consumer ends up gravitating toward a source or multiple sources that they consider trusted, and it makes it a little easier to discern between that and fake news.
There is a saying that the electorate gets what it deserves. And you know what? If you don't do your homework, if you show up at the polls and you have no idea who's on the ballot, well, you haven't done your homework. You get what you deserve. And I'm hopeful, I have to be optimistic, that at some point we're going to feel burned enough and taken and scammed enough that enough people just say, enough of this. I am going to consider the source. I'm going to go to trusted information. I'm going to get my own second source. We're allowed to tune in wherever we want, but sadly it's so bifurcated that we can just look at one source, left, right, whatever, and feed our own ideology as opposed to challenging ourselves. And while we put out real news, not the fake stuff, we can't make people feel a certain way. They have to figure that out for themselves. And one hopes that as an electorate, we're going to figure out sooner than later that we need to go to trusted sources, we need to do our homework, we need to get a second opinion, we need to do all the sorts of smart things that savvy people ought to do. I mean, when you think, we've got people spending more time researching what restaurant they're going to tonight than a background of a political candidate. Well, again, the electorate deserves exactly what it gets.
I was telling Rusty before we started, my wife and I were talking about this last night, and she said, do you remember when we were young growing up, if you fell for a hoax, if somebody in school pulled a prank on you and you fell for it, there was a public shaming, and that discouraged you from ever falling for that hoax again. We need to go back to that. We need to, every time somebody falls for one of these things, I do this with my brother when he sends me this stuff, every time somebody sends you one of these things, you ought to email them back and say, I can't believe you're so stupid you fell for this. And I think maybe with a little more public shaming and public humiliation, people would stop swallowing this stuff.
We live in a society that's a 24-hour news cycle, and with that, Rusty had alluded to it. There is this ability to go out and perhaps get news that is more one-sided and might fall within your leanings than in the past. Does that make our job more difficult, the 24-hour news cycle? Does that make our job more difficult in weeding out the fake news?
I suppose that it can, just like having the whole spectrum of ideology on one channel or another. I think that's possible. But honestly, I don't think we as journalists ought to buy into excuses. I mean, either it's a story or it's not. You mentioned you'd rather be last and correct than the first one to screw it up. That's been a good principle in our business for generations, and I think it will continue, regardless of how quickly we can post something to the web, how many hours we need to fill up on air. None of that has changed the principle of getting it right. So to my way of thinking, we just can't buy into excuses. We need to do it right.
24-hour news cycle, I kind of feel, is what I was brought into early in my career. And, you know, it's, yeah, the you hear the hunger for information is more now than it ever was. Well, that's true, but it'll probably be even more tomorrow and the next day and the next week. But, yeah, it doesn't change the basic principles of what we do and how we generate information and how we weed out what isn't fit to be on our air or in our newspapers.
I think it's kind of interesting. We talk about people getting news from their echo chamber. You know, the conservatives can listen to conservative news and liberals can listen to liberal news. And we've all studied the history of journalism. We know that there was a parallel to this at the beginning of the century when most cities had a Republican newspaper and a Democrat newspaper. And we're almost kind of going back to that, not on the newspaper front, unfortunately, but on the broadcast front. But I think you're right. I think if people have to challenge themselves to get outside of their echo chamber and at least listen to, I hate to use the phrase because it's been used as a bullying term now, but mainstream media, you know. Because the mainstream media at least is making an effort to be fair and to play it down the middle, whereas these echo chambers are not. They're playing to a canned audience.
And what you said is really important to remember. When people say to me, well, you know, newspapers have never been more biased. Well, my parents used to work for a paper that had Republican in its name. Our paper in Winona, Minnesota used to be the Republican Herald, not thinking they endorsed a hell of a lot of Democrats back then. So, I mean, newspapers actually had party names in their name. So when I hear this nonsense and revisionist history, it's just that. It's nonsense and revisionist history.
By stating a party affiliation in the newspaper name, do you think that made it easier for people to discern what side the information perhaps was coming from back when that was happening?
Well, that could be, although I've worked in two newspaper operations and literally before I started, but a city editor of one paper was running a political, the Democratic sheriff's campaign. And is that the kind of ethics we want? I don't think so. And the other paper was touting the other guy. And that's the proud heritage we want to talk about? Nonsense. I mean, it just ain't so. I suppose if you have on the top of your front page, we're Republicans, you can figure it out. But we don't have the luxury of two newspaper towns. We generally have one newspaper towns and electronic and websites and all sorts. So it's not that there's no information and no competition. There still is. But I would argue some of the fanciful notion of how it used to be, the golden era. Please, it wasn't golden at all. It was nonsense.
Does the competition factor Is that a driving force, not only in getting the content out to people, but also making sure, even more so, that the information that we are getting out is accurate? Is competition play a role in a driving force in making sure we're producing the best possible content we can day in and day out? I think this is going to be a fairly easy question to answer.
Well, no. Competition is there. I can't control that. But our viewers come first. And I'm sure Rusty would say his readers come first, and Dan would say his viewers come first. That's how it has to be. We've gone through years and years of internet reporting now, posting things online, and some places in the past had decided, hey, we should wait and hold back information because we want you to watch at 6 o'clock, and then we'll post it to the web after that. Well, that doesn't necessarily jive anymore because we have a viewership that wants the information now or 5 minutes ago, and we have to get it there. But we have to get it there the right way.
On balance, competition is a good thing. It can always go too far, and if it pushes someone to go to print or the web or broadcast with something that's wrong, that's not good. But I think competition keeps us all on our toes, and I think for the most part that's positive.
You know, what's been interesting to me in the last couple of years is not so much how the competition between us has changed, but we're now competing with ordinary citizens. Almost every day now, when there's some sort of breaking news story going on here in Eau Claire, you've seen it, I've seen it, people, just ordinary citizens have driven by and seen the police cars, and they're posting pictures and stories to the Facebook and Twitter long before we do, because again, they're not following any rules of journalism like we have to follow. And I think I feel more competition from that now than I do from professional journalists, because I know that we're all on the same page and we're all going to follow the same rules. I don't know what TMZ Eau Claire is doing, for God's sake, and I don't even know who that is. But apparently they have no rules whatsoever. And like I said, just Joe Citizen driving down the road that sees the body that was found in the Eau Claire River the other day. I think that was reported first by some ordinary citizen that was driving by and posted it to social media before, hey, look, I saw this. That bothers me more than anything else, is the competition with ordinary citizens.
Yeah, extremely difficult, and I think driven, especially now, more than ever by social media, and the smartphone. We have it all in our pocket. We can snap a picture, post to the web, snap of a finger. At this time, I wanted to kind of plant the seed here. If we have any questions in the audience, people have some ideas floating around that they want to ask the panel. I'd ask you if anybody wants to bring those forward at this time. Otherwise, we can kind of move on with some more questions. But if there's anything in particular you guys wanted to delve deeper into, I can open that up right now.
For me, the news is not, you know, relaxation. It's interactive. You can ask my wife. When I'm watching or listening to the TV, radio, newspaper, I mean, I'm interacting with the reporter, not always in a gentle way. I think newspapers, actual paper, if we ever lose that, and maybe I'm being generationally biased, it would be a terrible loss. I don't think the so-called stuff that comes across, even the legitimate stuff that comes on the computer or on the devices, is not the same thing. It defies our attention span to try to absorb anything meaningful from that. Again, maybe I'm deficient in that area. But I'm going to challenge you guys. I also listen to the BBC. I watch the BBC alternate with PBS NewsHour and Canadian Broadcasting, and it seems to me that those people are like dogs on a bone when they are interviewing public figures, whereas our people are much more deferential. And I enjoy the BBC and Canadian interviewers when they get on somebody and won't let him go until they get the truth out of them, or they just say, okay, you're not gonna tell us.
Yeah, I think we had a case, was it Peter Engel with NBC, part of the White House press corps? It wasn't Peter Engel. It was someone with NBC. The president made some claims about, well, he had more electoral votes than anyone has in decades, and he, the reporter sits there on his smartphone quietly and started reading off what the truth was and challenged the president. I don't think we should be jerks, but I also don't think we should just sit there in silence when someone is just lying. I think we should challenge. That's our job. You know, we're a watchdog. We're not an attack dog, but we also sure as hell shouldn't be a lapdog. We need to make sure that we're holding, especially public officials, feet to the fire, making sure that they're accountable. And I think that's a very interesting and important observation, that there are times we need to be tougher and more persistent in asking questions, in challenging. If I may, just for a moment, I think it's important, too, to remember what's happened in this state in the last couple of years. Right before the July 4th break a couple of years ago, we have legislators who want to gut the state's open meeting, open records laws. Who raised hell? We did. Before the first barbecue of July 4th, it was dropped, wasn't it? We need to remember things like that. When the Wisconsin idea was left out because of what we heard was a drafting error. It wasn't a drafting error. It's a lie. Emails using open records showed that it was very purposefully done. That was pulled. What happened in the past couple of weeks? Public notices were going to be yanked out of newspapers. They've only been in newspapers for more than two centuries as a means of explaining to the electorate what's going on. That was dropped, too, after a number of us wrote columns, wrote editorials, saying it's just nonsense. So I think we need to pause for a moment and look, as you say, do we need to do better in some areas? Absolutely. But let's look also at the way we can sway public policy, not only with good, solid reporting, but frankly with opinion pages that are not afraid to stand up to the bullies and say this is nonsense.
Anybody else up there? Yeah.
I heard a suggestion the other day that when you subscribe to the newspaper, you should also get a fact checker that goes along with it.
So how do we fund that? Or is that the consumer's responsibility or ours? No, I think, you know, that's kind of the contract, though, isn't it? If you're buying a newspaper, that is a source of information. But it's not the only one. There are other sources. And I think I have a number of people, especially our generation, saying, oh, I get two or three papers that I read every day. Or I look at the BBC, or I look at a... Good. You're not going to offend any of us by saying we look at multiple sources. So do we. We look at lots of different sources, and I think that's a really good idea. We encourage that. It's a lot better than saying, well, I didn't do my homework, but I went to vote today. I don't know who I was voting for. Oh, Lord. That's discouraging.
It is.
Who would the fact checker be? Would it be you?
Good.
All right.
You'd be a good one.
Yeah, I agree.
You would.
Mm-hmm. You could just ship out with all of our newspapers. We'd get one Henry with our newspaper, right?
The trouble is, if you show up with the paper on the front doorstep, they're going to want you to make coffee, too. That's so true. Just beware. It can be a tougher job than you think.
Anybody else out in the audience have anything?
You've all talked to some degree about discerning news consumers or the educated news consumer, but if you look at the people who are out there, most of them don't have much sophistication in terms of dealing with the media. Is it the industry's responsibility or the educational system's responsibility or both or maybe somebody else to try and do a lot more media education?
Yeah, I don't know what I've been out of school way too long to know what the schools are teaching as far as consumers of news. I know what the journalism schools are teaching. I remember when I was a senior at Menominee High School, we had a whole week one time on how to read a newspaper and how to pick apart and how to discern bias and you know how to look at it from a critical point of view. I don't know if anybody does that anymore. I hope they do. But, yeah, I don't know where that starts. But I think that's really the key to it. I think too many people have gotten too lazy about consuming news.
But I do want to be careful about this, especially with young journalists in the room. It's really tempting for older journalists to bemoan that, well, these young journalists, they're not serious, they're not paying attention. Well, being the, as I mentioned, parent of an Eau Claire grad, he went to a different, really profitable business. He's getting his doctorate in a couple weeks in music composition, so he'll be rich too. but the things that he reads, stunning. The different sources he goes to. So, you know, I'm always a little bit protective of this younger generation because I look at some of the really wise choices they make about what they read and different points of view. And I think there's hope. I really do. I think there's a lot of hope.
I do too, and I think it swings both ways. I think that, you know, just because we're the ones putting out the information and you're the consumers doesn't at all mean that we are in any way smarter or more sophisticated than anyone we're broadcasting to. And I know in our newsroom we try not to lose sight of that, and I hope that, you know, you all don't lose sight of that either, because, you know, she's just a gal, I'm just a guy. You know, we work hard every day, but we're people just like you are.
And now we'll take our final break on the West Side broadcast of UW Eau Claire's panel discussion on fake news. We'll be right back.
Support for WPR comes from the University of Wisconsin-Carbone Cancer Center, with more than 280 physicians and researchers serving Wisconsin and the region, on the web at uwhealth.org/cancer.
Welcome back to the West Side broadcast of UW Eau Claire's panel discussion about fake news, featuring Amanda Tyler of WEAU, Andrew Pfeffer also of WEAU, Dan Schillinger of WQOW, and Rusty Cunningham of the La Crosse Tribune. Now back to the discussion.
How important is it to have a good group of sources and to really establish trust in the people a lot of times that you'll be talking to on a daily basis? Your heads of police departments, heads of fire departments, different public officials. How important is that? But also to kind of keep yourself at arm's length to make sure that you aren't becoming a quote-unquote lapdog.
Yeah, I think we're only as good as our sources in a lot of cases, whether it's a local shooting or whether that's something that government is considering or having good sources is crucial, and I think as especially young journalists spending time to cultivate people who are in the know, to really spend good time figuring out who has the right information that they can share, who will give you the right context, not just the right information, but the right context to really frame that information, I think is really important. And to have a source who will tell you, yeah, you're barking up the wrong tree on this story. That's really not the way to go. But, yeah, you don't want to keep going to the same people and be used. There are certainly times in all of our careers where we've written unflattering stories about people we really liked personally. But that's just part of the drill and part of the business. We're going to be in uncomfortable positions that call upon our professionalism to do what our craft demands, and that is to tell the truth. And there are plenty of times when, over my career, we've written arrests of people, or their family member, we're not going to keep that out of the paper because it's Joe's kid. We're just not going to do that. So I think you'll know in your gut if you use an ethical standard that this is a story we need to tell, even though it's uncomfortable, even though it's about someone we know. But I'm sure we all have stories, and they can be gut-wrenching, because you hate being the truth teller when the subject is someone you know and like, and they've really screwed up. But we have to do our job. Our customers, our readers, our listeners depend upon that.
Absolutely. I think it's Amanda touched on something really important, and I think it's particularly true in a smaller town like this, where a lot of the reporters are entry-level people or people who only have 1 or 2 years' experience. And it's very enticing when you get sucked into the city manager, he takes you under his wing, or the public information officer for XYZ, and you feel like an insider and you want to be their buddy. But there will always come a day where you have to push back against that, and it's tough. And it's a lesson that we've all had to learn at one time or another.
Yeah. In the end, the viewers, the readers have to get a fair shake.
Yeah.
They just do.
But I would argue that's part of our responsibility, and I dare say that reporter has been here for a year or two, and you have them. And I mean, that's why people who've been around a while are often that last line of defense, to say, okay, you've talked to that city manager who you're cozying up to. Did you talk to the developer whose project got turned down? Did you ask them what happened? That's our responsibility to make sure that we're asking that next question of that other source. And again, I know as good coaches and news directors that you're all doing that. You're all making sure that that reporter has taken extra steps. And I feel that's a really important part, and I bet you all do too, mm-hmm. of what our role is. To make sure that we're true to our job and pushing young people, teaching, coaching, to make sure that we're doing the type of due diligence that we need to do. It's our credibility on the line. It's our professionalism. And I dare say we take that really personally.
I just want to take a chance to reiterate, as we move forward and as people continue to consume news, we don't really know what will come next. And the internet is kind of the thing where a lot of people will go and turn to get their news right now, but what the internet might look like in 20 years might be completely different than what we have right now. Do you guys foresee at all there being future challenges in any new forms of media that would come out that could also challenge us as traditional media and further perhaps enhance the problem of spreading fake news throughout our society? And it's, of course, I'm asking you guys to be future predictors, yeah. which none of us really are, but...
And I'd probably say probably, because there's a market for it. There's a demand for information and sources that people trust to get news and weather and sports and other information like that. I think everybody, who has a desire to put out stuff like fake news kind of wants a piece of the pie. But that's also a reason why we kind of have to stand strong and continue doing what we do, for no other reason than it's what we do.
And as you suggest, I think clearly there are challenges ahead, but there are challenges now. I love the concept that you brought up about where's our level of shame? If we're taken in, don't we feel a certain amount of shame? I have to share a quote that I just love. I think the press has a right to criticize the president, and I think the president has the right of self-defense. I would suggest also that we follow this rule. The president should treat the press just as fairly as the press treats him. Who do you think said that? Take a guess. Which president said that? Nixon. You know, that great upholder of the truth.
And if I remember correctly, because I was watching that speech that day, that was the same event at which Dan Rather stood up and said, Dan Rather, CBS News, and there was a smattering of applause. And President Nixon, trying to be clever, said, "Are you running for something, Mr. Rather?" And Rather shot back, "No, sir, are you?"
Which... March of 1974, during a Q&A with the National Broadcasters Association in Houston. You're absolutely right.
Amanda asked a great question. Who could have imagined 10 years ago? Let's just go back to 2007. Who could have imagined that in 10 years, every citizen on the planet, pretty much, would have a high-quality video recorder in their pocket 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and the ability to upload that video to any place they wanted on a moment's notice? Who could have predicted that 10 years ago? Certainly not me. So I have no idea where we're going, but I know that it'll get faster, and there'll be more of it, whatever it is. But the rules are always going to have to be the same for us if we want to survive, and that is truth and fact-checking and making sure that everything is accurate. Because if we fail at that, then we're lost.
So being a journalist is still the best revenge.
Absolutely.
Well, I'd like to thank everybody for joining us this evening, and hopefully you all become even better news consumers from this discussion this evening. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this panel discussion about fake news on today's West Side. Next week, guest host Dean Kallenbeck will talk about the latest updates on the Confluence Performing Arts Center. I hope you have a safe and productive week. We'll chat again next Monday morning.